Committee on Early Childhood and Youth Development Policy will come to order. And Representative Lane moves the minutes of March 19th. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Representative Moline, I assume you want to move House File 2576. And where does it go? I'm told it goes to Ways and Means, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move, 2576 to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Go ahead, Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is the expungement bill, and we're here today because of the provisions dealing with juvenile expungements.
Representative Moline, just a second. There's several amendments. Do you want to, what we usually do is put on the ones that you wanted to get it in the shape the author wants. So,
thank you, Mr. Chair. The A14 amendment is mine that I would like to offer. I do have a oral amendment to the amendment. I don't know if you do the oral amendment before you move the amendment. I never remember.
You move the amendment, then we do the amendment to the amendment.
Okay.
So you've moved the amendment. Now you can move an oral amendment to it.
I'd just like to, on line 3.10 of the amendment, delete the word considered.
Is that the only amendment to that one?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I'll read the amendment back. The oral amendment to A140988 is on line 3.10, strike the word considered. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carried. Now we're back to the amendment, and Representative Moline again moves the amendment as amended. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Okay. Is that your only amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Go ahead then. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And again, we're here on the expungement bill regarding the Section 1, which deals with juvenile expungements. This bill came out of a working group that we held over the interim, a joint bipartisan group between the House and the Senate. We've been trying to address these issues for a number of years. So over the interim, the House and the Senate came together to put together a proposal, and this is what came out of that working group. It's been through a number of committees at this point, and we're here today to talk on the juvenile piece. And just to give a little bit of a history for purpose of the committee, juvenile expungements are found under 260B.198, which is a separate expungement provision than we're normally familiar with, which is 609A, which deals with adult expungements. And I did a little legislative history today, or I should say I had House Counsel do a little legislative history. And basically that expungement provision dealing with juveniles was first enacted around 1959. And from about 1959 until 2013, the court was expunging juvenile records, including those held by the executive branch. But 2013 court case in the matter of the welfare of JJP, the Supreme Court limited the amount of expungements that a court could do and basically just said all the court could do was expunge the court order itself. And so that left hanging all the other records dealing with juveniles. And we know as committee members and as legislators that we often hear from our constituents about a lot of the barriers they face as a result of having a juvenile record or a criminal record. Barriers to employment, barriers to housing, and even young people that aren't able to get into college because they have a juvenile record. And so in light of the recent Supreme Court decision and in light of the, I think, need to give young people a second chance who have made mistakes as kids, we took a look at the juvenile expungement statute again and made a couple of changes, including clarifying that the court has the ability to expunge juvenile delinquency records, even those outside of just the juvenile delinquency order. and a number of factors for the court to consider in determining whether or not an expungement should take place, which are outlined in the bill. The amendment that we adopted was to address some concerns that DHS had just in clarifying the language for when they would have access, when and if they'd have access to an expunged record, and what, how they'd be able to use that record, and also some concerns that the BCA expressed regarding that expungement actually means sealed, not destroyed. So that was the language that we added on lines 3.9 to 3.11. And the BCA asked us to take out that word considered. And so we're just making clear that expungement means sealed instead of destroyed. And so that was some of the compromise language that came out of the last committee that we were at and that we just amended onto the bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions at this point, or I don't know if you want to go into the other amendments.
I'll ask questions first if there's any questions. Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Moline, thank you. Maybe you could clarify for me. So there's expungements, and there's sealed, and then there's destroyed. Sealed and expungements are equivalent? Are they, do they mean the same thing?
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair and Representative Myra, we're saying expungement means sealed.
Okay.
The courts and the BCA and other agencies no longer destroy records. There was a point in time where there was confusion on whether or not expunged meant destroyed or sealed, but we're saying it means sealed. So when the court orders that a record be expunged, that means that who's ever the keeper of that record, the BCA or the courts, they seal that record. As opposed to destroying it. And part of the reason is because there's a number of provisions in the bill that allow access to expunged records from criminal justice agencies for the purpose of furthering an investigation or prosecution or criminal background checks. So so the record is sealed, not destroyed.
Thank you.
Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, Representative Moline. What happens to an expungement if a person commits another crime?
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Myra. I believe under the new Section 7A. Under Section 7A, an expunged record of conviction may be open for, Section 9, Subdivision 7A. An expunged record may be open for the purposes of criminal investigation, prosecution, or sentencing. So that allows for if the person is arrested for a subsequent crime, the prosecutor or criminal justice agencies are able to have access to that expunged record for the purpose of prosecution or enhancement of a crime.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Representative Moline, what types of crimes by juveniles are allowed to be expunged?
Representative Moline.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Myra. Traditionally, since the statute was enacted since 1959, any crime committed by a juvenile, so long as it remains within the juvenile court, is allowed to be expunged. So if the juvenile creates a more heinous crime and they're certified as an adult, then that's not covered by juvenile expungements. That would be in the realm of adult expungements. If the but other than that, juvenile records are allowed to be expunged. There's a number of factors that the court has to consider in whether or not to expunge a record. Those are listed starting on line 1.19. So some things that the court has to consider in determining whether or not a record should be expunged of a juvenile is, first of all, that the expungement of the record would yield a benefit to the subject of the record that outweighs the detriment to the public and public safety in sealing the record. And then they have to determine age, education, experience, background, mental and emotional development of the subject of the record at the time of the commission of the offense, the circumstances and nature and severity of the offense, the victim and community impact, including age and vulnerability of the victim, the level of participation of the subject of the record in planning and carrying out the offense, so on and so forth. So those are the factors that the court would have to consider in determining whether or not to expunge a record. That's actually quite a bit stricter than what the law was up until now. Up until now, the statute dealing with juvenile expungements only said that the court can expunge a record at any time that it wants to. And there was no factors that we set forward that we said the court, you have to look at this before you can expunge a record. So we're actually adding a number of things that the court has to consider, whereas before those weren't in place for juvenile expungements.
Thank you. Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, is it true that if a record is expunged, different organizations like DHS that would give licensing would not have access to that information? So you could have somebody who has committed a crime against a child, for example, and that they would be in a position of authority over children?
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, it depends. The language of the statute requires that the commissioner of the Department of Human Service get notice when somebody files an expungement petition. Then the Department of Human Services is able to weigh in on whether or not that person should get an expungement. It also requires that notice of an expungement is directed at the commissioner of Human Services. If the commissioner is not notified of a petition, and if the order is not directed at the Commissioner of Human Services, then they still have access to that record for background purposes. If the other standards are met, where they got proper notice and the order was directed at them, then that person is able to pursue employment opportunities within DHS licensing.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure, Representative Moline, I'm not sure I'm totally clear on it. So an adult has their record expunged, and later after that sometime they would like to get a license or of some nature where they are in authority over children. Would the department have access to those records, or they wouldn't?
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, it depends on whether or not that person notified the commissioner as required by statute when they filed their expungement petition. If they did all the proper notification, and again, I think we're only talking about juvenile expungements today, but the example you used was if you were talking about an adult expunging a juvenile record.
Representative Moline, I think the Inspector General seems to... Do you want to speak on this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Moline, what I'm concerned about is children being in a situation where there is an individual who has committed a crime against children and they are an authority over them.
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair and Representative Myra, I think I understand what you're saying. What I'm trying to say is when you go through the expungement process, you're required to notify the Department of Human Services that you're seeking an expungement. The department then has opportunity to weigh in on whether or not your expungement should be granted. If the court orders an expungement, the order has to be directed at the Commissioner of Human Services. And I guess I understand what you're saying, although there's a number of pretty well laid out considerations that the court has to make in determining whether or not to order an expungement. And so the court is essentially finding, after weighing all these things together and after having input from DHS and others, you know, they're essentially deciding that this person is not a threat to public safety and would not pose a threat to the public. And so that's why the expungement order is going forward in the first place. But if Mr. Kerber wants to add to that, he certainly is welcome to.
I think Inspector General Kerber, did you want to, I think you want to state something on this.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Jerry Kerber from the Department of Human Services, and I can really only echo what Representative Moline said very well, that what this bill is really doing is clarifying the process, and especially with the amendment that went on today, in that if somebody is petitioning the court for an expungement of their record, it's much more clear that they need to include the Department of Human Services with the notice of petition. And then the department can weigh in, as Representative Moline said, in the court process, making the arguments that we think are appropriate. If we see that the crime is related to children, and then we would be saying, well, we don't think that the expungement should probably apply if this person is going to be working in child care, for instance. And that what we would do is we'd explain that we, the legislature, has another provision in law that's another practice where we're obligated to take a look at those disqualifying factors, as we call them, and decide whether or not that person presents a risk of harm in that particular setting. And so it's much like this. It's a little more detailed and it's a little bit more tailored to that setting. But as Representative Moline is saying, that, you know, we would make that argument to the court, and then the court decides at the end whether or not to expunge the record anyway. Much more criteria are going to be before the court for making that decision under this bill than are present now. But then at the end of the day, if in fact we have been served with notice and we have objected and the court order also relates to the department's records, then we wouldn't be able to use that record. But it would have to have gone through that review.
Thank you.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Moline. I guess my line of questioning, I think, is similar to Representative Myra, just trying to understand the bill. And I apologize for it. I'm not a lawyer. And you're looking through the bill, and there's a lot of referrals to sections of law that require a lot of time to research. So my general question, let me give you an example and tell me how this example fits within what you're trying to accomplish. So I'm the former treasurer of our local church, and recently we wanted to make sure that anyone dealing with children had to have a background check. That's a policy our church made because we want to both protect children and also reduce the opportunity for a frivolous lawsuit. But primarily, it was to protect the kids under our care. So we had everyone who was with any child at any time go through a background check. How does this bill change the amount of information that that church would receive on someone who could potentially harm kids? Any relationship here? Tell me about that situation, what the bill would actually do. Would it hide more records? Would it not?
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, a couple things. Unless the person has an expunged record, which again is a very high threshold to meet, it wouldn't change anything. You would still have access to people's background records unless they'd had it expunged, unless they met that high threshold and the court expunged it. Under the, you know, we're here today talking about the juvenile section, so I wasn't necessarily prepared to talk about the adult section. If somebody has an adult conviction and has an expungement, most serious crimes dealing with kids, any serious felonies, crimes of violence are excluded from the ability to even have an expungement in the first place. So you're talking about a juvenile offense, so a 16 or 17-year-old was convicted of a crime, not convicted of a crime because a juvenile adjudication is not considered a crime, but they were adjudicated delinquent as a teenager, say, and a number of years later they got an expungement because they met those requirements that were setting forth, then they would have an expunged record. And that would be the only time that you wouldn't have access to it, is if you were doing a background check on somebody that had a juvenile record expunged.
Representative Barrett.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. Let me state further what we did and why we did it. We have a lot of people working with kids. We have a vacation Bible school. We have Wings on Wednesday night. We have Sunday school. We have a lot of opportunity for anyone volunteering, juvenile and adult, to work with kids. So our policy was that anyone needed a background check. Obviously, yeah, there's a point where a background check on a youth working with another youth doesn't work. But the point is that we have many people working with kids, including other kids. So I want to know which expungements that would be appropriate to know about will we not be able to know about in the future because of this bill.
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, I don't know how I could answer that question any differently than I just answered it, other than there's two different standards in the bill for juvenile expungements and adult expungements. So are you asking about just juvenile delinquency expungements?
I'm asking about, yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm asking about the details of the bill as it relates to juvenile expungements, as it relates to the safety of kids in the care of a school, a church, any other activity in which someone, whether they're currently an adult, whether they're currently a juvenile, but the point is they've had a juvenile expungement. What information will no longer be available to a caring organization that wants to protect kids?
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, if they're able to get an expungement from the court, their juvenile adjudication records will no longer be available to the public. They would only be available to criminal justice agencies who need to access them for purposes of prosecution, sentencing, background checks within a criminal justice agency. But if somebody has an expungement order from the court, which again, we're putting in place a much higher threshold than has been the law since 1959, but if they're able to meet that threshold and get an expungement, their expunged records would no longer be available to the public.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Is there any discussion? Oh, do you have an amendment? You have two amendments? Okay, we'll do that because it doesn't look like there's anything else. do you want to move which amendment? I'm sorry. Representative Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, just to kind of cut to the short of the line of questioning that we've just had, it's my understanding, based on your testimony, that you do not believe that your bill, if it becomes law, will make kids in a church setting or a child care setting any more or less safe than they are under current law, but the legislature is providing greater clarity to the court system about what the standards are for expungement. Is that correct?
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, I would say yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
He needs to be the batting practice pitcher for the home run derby. Representative Myra, I think you wanted to offer A-17?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to offer Amendment A-17.
Okay. Would you explain it?
Certainly. It's line 7.2. We strike claims of innocence and add the word and. On 7.3, we strike and irregularities in the trial. And then further down on line 7.10, after victims, we add the words, or whether victims, and then it reads, the recommendations of victims, or whether victims of the underlying crime were minors. The reason for my amendment is I don't want us to have to go through the court case already. Claims of innocence and irregularities in the trial should have already been dealt with. And I would really, I'd like the voice of the minor victim to be heard as well.
Representative Moline, do you have a comment on this?
Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, I first of all would say that it's already required that the voice of the victim, whether or not they were a minor or an adult at the time of the offense is considered in the petition. And that's line 7.10, the recommendations of the victim of the underlying crime. That being said, I'm fine with there being more clarity and that the court being required to weigh whether or not the victim of the crime was a minor. And because of that and your other suggestions, I think are very fair and as well, I would be willing to accept your amendment.
Thank you.
Is there any other comments then? Looks like the author will accept the amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair, I have Amendment 1, or ACE 18.
Okay, Representative Myra offers A18. Do you want to explain that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, my amendment here is wanting to just kind of slow down a little bit on the expungements for adults, recognizing that children are vulnerable, and I would like to protect them more. Line 3.22 would read, a state of adjudication, the offenses did not have a child as a victim, and the petitioner has not been charged with a new crime for at least 2 years since, and then going on. And basically the same kind of idea. Could we do this in steps? These are new pathways for expungement, aren't they? Or am I misunderstanding? These three, point two, three, and four. Are these new ways of having expungements?
So, Representative Moline?
Mr. Chair, Representative Myra, not really. In Minnesota, we have, there's an inherent authority expungement, and the expungement's available under 609A.03. There was some Supreme Court decisions that the court took it upon themselves to limit their ability to expunge records held by the executive branch. So what this bill does is clarify what records the court can expunge, and also really limits the amount of crimes that could qualify. So misdemeanors, gross misdemeanors, but then really low-level felonies and low on the bracket of the sentencing guidelines. So I don't know if we want to get into all the adult expungements here, but that's what this bill is doing as far as the adult expungements go. And you can see, I mean, it's listed what crimes qualify for an expungement right in the bill, so you can go through and see those. So most crimes that we typically think of as the child being the victim don't qualify for an expungement.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Meyer.
Representative Moline, Mr. Chair, I would withdraw my A18 amendment.
Representative Barrett.
Thank you, Representative Moline.
Thank you.
Representative Barrett, do you still have a question?
I do, yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Moline, it just caught my eye as you were talking to Representative Myra regarding whether this does or doesn't add ways to expunge a record. Looking at line 3.14, we've struck out the four words not resulting in conviction. I think that in and of itself expands greatly the ability to expunge a juvenile record, does it not?
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, you're talking about these are adult expungements. The juvenile expungements are in Section 1 of the bill. Those are regarding juvenile delinquency petitions. The section that you're in is regarding adult expungements. And we have always had inherent authority expungement, which is the court's own inherent authority to expunge records that were found outside of the confines of 609A.03, which is a statutory expungement. I'm sorry.
I'm not a lawyer.
Representative Barrett, the court, we went through that in different committees. The court has its own inherent powers to do that.
So the fact that we're in early education makes this section probably not within our scope? Is that probably an answer for me?
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, I was under the impression that we're here dealing with the juvenile
Yes, Representative Moline, you're right. This is only for the juvenile part of it. And Representative Meyer, did you have something?
Well, if I can...
I'm
a little confused because we were just talking about this issue. And the answer to Representative Meyer's question was not really, as it compares to the ability to offer more ways to expunge a record. And we were talking about, I think we're talking about this section. I could be wrong. You guys could be talking about a different section, but I thought we were talking about this section. And I'm looking at four words that significantly impact the ability to expunge records, because we're striking out words that say not resulting in conviction. That's a pretty heady group of four words that we're adding into or taking away from statute. So I just wanted to understand whether I'm seeing this correctly or not. regardless of whether it relates to kids or adult expungement.
Representative Moline.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barrett, we were in that section because that's the amendment that Representative Myra had offered was in that section. It's not the juvenile delinquency section of the bill, but under the court's inherent authority, they have always had the authority to expunge criminal records that were actual conviction, not resulting in the petitioner's favor. So we're adding clarity to a statute, to something that the courts always had the power to do through inherent authority. I'm not sure if that answers your question. Maybe Mr. Haase can take a stab at it.
Oh, Mr. Haase.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Mark Haase. I'm the Vice President of the Council on Crime and Justice. And the Council on Crime and Justice has been involved in the issue of criminal and juvenile records expungement for many years, both at weighing in at the courts and working here at the legislature. And we represent people in expungement cases and work with many other organizations and attorneys that do the same. Senator Barrett, there's one way that, so another way to state what Representative Moline said is the issue at the courts has been whether or not the courts under their own authority can seal not just their own records but also executive branch records, BCA, law enforcement records, and they've gone back and forth on that question. And recently, recently in the adult area, just in May of 2013, they said that they should not be reaching over into the executive branch and sealing records because of the separation of powers, unless they've been given that authority by the legislature. That does not, over the last couple decades, they have been sealing both judicial and executive branch records, but it kind of depended on which judge you went to and how they were interpreting the law. And what this adult provision here is, the legislature is coming in and saying, these are the records that we're saying the courts can seal at the executive branch. And as Representative Moline said, the legislature through this bill would be putting some pretty clear limits on that. There would be waiting periods. Serious felonies are excluded from this. So in some ways, it's a complicated question, because in some ways you could say it's an expansion of some of those executive branch records that the courts conceal, but there's also some limits being put on it. I hope that's helpful.
Representative Bear.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, I forget your name, I apologize for that.
Mark Haase.
Mr. Haase, thank you. So my concern here with this is as it relates to convictions, because I think historically we've tended to expunge records that from when the charges were dismissed, when they're found not guilty, not entered a guilty plea, that type of thing. And convictions were a little bit more difficult, although they could happen, they were more difficult to expunge. Is that a true statement? And if it is, we're adding a lot. We're allowing for the ability to expunge convicted records to a greater degree than we had before, is my interpretation. Is that correct?
Representative Haase. I'm not Representative Mr. Haase. I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair and Representative Barrett, I'm not trying to be evasive here at all, but the problem has been in the past that, for everybody involved, petitioners, attorneys, judges, prosecutors, it really depended on which judge you went to. Whether or not they would seal what level of crime, when they would seal it, whether they would seal the executive branch record or the judicial branch record. And really, for some judges, this may make it easier to seal some of those conviction records at the executive branch, but in other cases, with these waiting periods, very clear criteria, both in the juvenile and the adult areas, for some it may make it more difficult, and it's definitely creating a lot more clarity. And if I might, Mr. Chair, I just this legislation, as Representative Moline mentioned, has been a long time, or this issue has been an issue for many, many years here in Minnesota, and there's many organizations and groups that have weighed in on the bill up to this point. you know, there's, I think there's representatives here, but for example, the Minnesota County Attorneys Association is supportive of this bill. In other committees, we've gone through three policy committees now so far. There has not been any opposition to this so far. Excuse me. We've worked with domestic violence and sexual assault advocates, and in the current version of the bill, even at a misdemeanor level, any domestic violence crimes are excluded here. So that, you know, I feel like this is a where we've come to at this point is a very sort of balanced approach to dealing with. And you know that the real issue here is that, you know, you probably hear from constituents, and we hear it all the time, people who have juvenile records. I'll stick to juvenile records. That just, they continue to hold them back the rest of their lives. And it used to be that if you got some kind of a juvenile record, it went away after you're 18. That's the general perception in the public, that if you make a mistake or even do something bad sometimes before you're 18, it's not going to hold you back forever. In Minnesota, that's not the case anymore. Laws over the last couple decades have made some of those records public and created other ways they can be used. And this is really a tailored, a way to give the court very, very specific criteria for when, in some of those cases, the record should not continue to hold back that particular individual for specific activities.
Okay, member, we have to go on to the next bill. We have beat it close to death. Representative Moline renews her motion to re-refer House File 2576 to the committee, as amended, to the Committee on Ways and Means. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no.
No.
Carries. Thank you. Representative Allen. Chair will move House File 3027 and that it be referred to Judiciary. Representative Allen, go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House File 3027 is a DHS bill. This bill makes technical corrections to the North Star Care for Children program within the Children and Family Services Administration of DHS. And before this committee is Article 1. Article 2 is going to be reserved for another day. And Article 3 is before another committee. So there's someone from the department here to talk about Article 1, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. State your name and then go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, my name is John Sellman. I'm an area manager at Hennepin County, and I'm currently working at the Department of Human Services as project lead for North Star Care for Children. You may remember that North Star Care for Children was enacted last session, and it unifies benefits for children in foster care, in relative care, and in adoptions, and in doing so, eliminates some of the barriers that children have experienced from acquiring a permanent family when they can't be reunified with their original family. As Representative Allen noted, these are technical corrections. Most of them bring North Star Care for Children into compliance with federal Title IV-E regulations. Title IV-E is a source of funding that is extensively used in North Star Care for Children. For instance, it adds federally required background study requirements. These reflect current foster care practice for county, tribal, and private agencies. It also permits the commissioner to conduct federally required background studies in the unusual case where the prospective kinship relative custodian is not already a licensed foster parent. That occurs in Section 5. In Section 9, it provides a federally required optional transition from kinship assistance to adoption assistance. Adoption is the federal preferred option, and if a child's custody has been transferred to a relative, and it subsequently makes more sense for the child to be adopted, then the benefit has to be able to follow them. The rest of the corrections in this bill streamline processes, reduce duplication, add legal references, or clarifying language that's inclusive of tribal practices and county practices. We've identified these improvements as we've been working on the details of implementation with counties, tribes, and other stakeholders. In sections 3, 4, 6, and 7, it clarifies eligibility and placement settings to be inclusive of tribal and county agency practices. In sections 8, 9, and 10, it streamlines the uniform assessment process and the relative custody assistance reimbursement process to make them more efficient. We will be seeking a change in the assessment process language that's before you now as we go forward. It adds a legal cross-reference to North Star Care for Children for adoption when medical assistance is concerned. That's in sections 1, 2, 11, and 12, various cross-references. And then finally, it changes one of the components' names. We had been using the term guardianship assistance for the benefit that accrues to children whose custody has been transferred to a relative. But since guardianship is used in a number of ways in Minnesota law, it turned out to be confusing. And so we're proposing that that be changed from guardianship assistance to kinship assistance, since it's the relative or important friend that's the key relationship here. That's in section 14. Those are the main points covered in Article 1. If there are questions, I could certainly address them.
Well, right off the bat, would you explain a little further what guardianship assistance meant and what it's going to mean now? And I mean, a guardianship is very specific under the law in Minnesota. Was it not really limited to guardianship, and you just for some reason and got into this statute called that way or something? Or and how did that ever work out? Didn't the courts have trouble? Or
Mr. Chair, the question is a good one. We adopted the federal term. We thought that it would be helpful in Minnesota if we were using the same term as the federal government. They use the term kinship guardianship assistance, and so we use the term guardianship assistance. It was probably a poor choice on our part. In fact, in many circumstances, a person who has the status of guardianship or guardian wouldn't be eligible for this benefit. It's specifically available in a situation where a relative or important friend has assumed custody. Custody has been formally transferred by the court to them. And so the proper term would be the relative custodian, and we adopted the term kinship assistance to distinguish it from a guardianship assistance. That seemed as though that was a more useful term. It's one of the federal terms. They call it kinship guardianship assistance. Hope that answers your question.
Sort of. Are there other questions? Any other questions? No? Any comments? Okay, then, well, where's Peter? Somebody want to ask a question? This
Mr. Chair
is going to be handled differently. Who said something? Oh, Representative Allen.
Oh, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to clarify. There was an amendment submitted that it was a correction or technical from Representative Norton. You said that was already passed. Is that?
Yes, that's what I'm looking for.
Oh.
We've already passed it, so.
I have a copy of it, Mr. Chair.
Pardon?
You're looking for a copy of it, Mr. Chair?
Right. It's okay. Supposed to be in the packets. Something happened. Things never happen right around the house, of course, but something happened for members, and it didn't get somewhere, and so this is a bill that it pertains to. So we're trying to put it on. We already passed it. It was non-controversial.
Okay.
Yeah, maybe if you, I don't know, where did he go?
Mr. Chair, this amendment was, the underlying bill was heard and passed in Early Childhood Committee earlier this year and was added to the HHS policy bill but was inadvertently omitted. So Representative Norton would like to keep the language alive in order to match up with the Senate version, which is moving this week.
Right.
And this is.
Oh, there finally comes the copy. Somehow they. I guess House Research was told to put it in and somehow it didn't. So.
And Mr. Chair.
And Representative Allen.
I can add that the amendment was unanimously had bipartisan support.
Right.
And the department crafted the language.
Right. And so. The chair will move Amendment A3 to House File 3027, and it's my understanding the author accepts it. Is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. All in favor of putting the author the bill in the way the author wants it, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, no. Carries. Okay, with that, and as I said, this is exactly what we already passed unanimously. So, and my understanding is the A2 is not going to get offered. Is that correct today?
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Thank you. Okay. Then looks like all in favor of the chair renews his motion to pass House File 3027 as amended to the Committee on Judiciary Policy and Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed, no. Carries. Thank you.
Mr.
With that, the meeting's adjourned.